different list.
Yeah, because...
Okay.
I get a little distracted.
See, I even forgot the water already.
I'm actually an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 8th, 2005, and that is only because of strong but loving sponsorship. Rooms like this and a God of my understanding that I found from doing the steps and people like you guys. Thank you, Sam, for asking me. He asked me a while ago. I had a double ear infection and couldn't make it the first time. Doctor's orders to stay home, which as an alcoholic, I don't really like to follow doctor's orders, but I follow doctor's orders. And so I've had a really long time to think about what I'm going to say and then a long drive to think about it some more. But, you know, I called my sponsor on the way up here, and she was in Walmart with her kids. And so she said, I'll call you back. She said, if I don't talk to you before, just remember, have fun and get sober. And you know, and that it is fun in here. It's more fun in here. It has to be more fun in here. I'm not going to stay. I have a home group. It's the Buford Road Group. We meet on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock in Richmond, Virginia. So if anybody finds themselves in Richmond, Virginia on a Wednesday night and you want a good meeting, come on. It is an open meeting, so all are welcome. You know, it's been a long time since I was here. It was even before I was married, and I'm still married. Which is pretty amazing thing, and because I was not the Marian kind before I got sober. You know, it's hard. When I was driving up here, I kept thinking of some drinking stories to identify with, and it's not really the drinking stories that we identify with. It's the feeling that we identify with. We identify with that feeling of not ever fitting in, of always being different. For me, it was always wanting to be the best at something as soon as I tried it. And that's why you have lessons and classes. And I know that today that I can't be the best at something. As soon as I pick it up, I'm not gifted like that. And most people aren't. But for me, I felt like if I didn't hit a home run when I played softball, or if I wasn't this perfect ballerina, which I was not a very good ballerina, then everybody would look at me and it would be all my fault if we didn't win the game, or if anything. It was like the weight of the world on my shoulders from the very beginning. I did things like I super glued my mouth shut when I was little. I bit into a tube of super glue when I was little and super glued my mouth shut. And I asked my mom, they joke and say that they're sorry that they ever peeled the glue off, but I asked my mom, because I'm like, oh my gosh, as a child, can you imagine the panic and fear of not being able to open your mouth? And she said, you were absolutely fine because everyone's attention was on you. And I said, okay, that's right. Like, that's not a normal child's reaction. That, as I know today, and all in hindsight, that's an alcoholic's reaction. Like, I always want all the attention on me, but then I don't. Like, I love you, and I want all of you to like me and accept me, but at the same time, I don't really care, and I don't want to care, and I want you away from me, but I want you close to me, and it's just that whole internal battle that I've grown up with that I've had my whole entire life. You know, I remember running away one time, but I didn't really run away. I just hid upstairs to see if anybody missed me, and they didn't know that I was gone, and I, like, threw this fit that how did you not know I was gone? And I think it was probably like 15 minutes. So of course they're not going to know I was gone. But to me, it seemed like a really long time. And I thought that their world would just be devastated without me there. But that was 15 minutes and I was hiding in the closet. They didn't send out the troops. But you know, I came from a very loving home. My mom was a single mother. My grandparents are my most favorite people in the whole world, and they're both up in heaven. They both got to see me sober before they died, and that's the biggest, that is probably one of my biggest gifts in sobriety. But they didn't want ever to upset me. They never wanted to, you know, if my mom grounded me, she was grounded too, because she was a single mother, and so she didn't really, my groundation never lasted very long. And she didn't want me to be mad at her because I was really all she had. I kind of took on that role that I think only children, especially only girls take with their mother when it's a single mother. And as the oldest grandchild, but still the baby, if that makes sense. I mean, I was grandma and grandpa's baby, and they did everything for me. And I was definitely spoiled, rotten to the core. And whatever I wanted, I would stomp my feet and I would get. And that doesn't fare well when you get into your adult years. It doesn't look really, it's not really attractive to see a 20-something-year-old, I'm not 20-something now, but a 20-something-year-old stomping her feet, trying to, you know, get what she wants and throwing a fit when you don't get it. So, you know, I remember when I took my first drink. It was not too far from here at a UNC-UVA football game. I was 13 years old. It was peppermint schnapps, and I have never drank peppermint schnapps since then, to my knowledge. I immediately wanted to, like, just come out and play. And where I wanted to go out and play was to the fraternity houses. And I don't even know how I knew what a fraternity was, but I knew that there was something, some other place where I needed to be, and I was ready to be there. Like, I was ready to be there. And at 13, you don't have that much access to alcohol. And so, you know, it wasn't all the time. And I don't remember, I remember being excited when I had a girlfriend and her mom would go and buy us alcohol. She would buy us alcohol. Boys would, and she would stay away for the night, and the boys would come over and spend the night. And I can't imagine that now. Like, I look back at pictures when I was 13 and I was a baby, but I thought I was so big. I thought I was something else. And, you know, a lot of firsts happened at that house. A lot of firsts that probably wouldn't have happened if I hadn't been drinking. A lot of firsts that wouldn't have happened if I hadn't been drinking, I'm pretty sure. Part of my story is I want to feel different. I want to have somebody beside me because that makes me better. If I have a guy with me, then I'm okay. And if I have some sort of chemical to make my head stop, then I'm going to be okay. And, you know, drugs are part of my story, and I can't leave them out. I identify absolutely as an alcoholic. I am an alcoholic through and through, and I did drugs because I could drink more when I did them. And if I hadn't done drugs, I would not, I don't think, drugs brought me to AA faster than alcohol would have, because I could have stayed out there drinking a lot longer than I did. I found the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous through going to treatment for drugs. And, you know, I've tried to tell my story and not include that, but I can't because it's not my story. And but I am absolutely an alcoholic. I love the feeling that I get, that's that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once from taking that first drink. I can feel it in my toes. I can feel it right now as I'm standing here. My shoulders come down. I can breathe a little bit, and I'm okay with the world. And nothing else ever did that. Now, when I did the drugs, because I really like to drink a lot, and I have a very low tolerance, but I also like to be alert and aware of my situation and surroundings. So I made sure to have that perfect cocktail combination, and that got pretty expensive, as it does. I drank a lot, and I loved drinking. I had fun drinking. I had so much fun drinking, and I only drank good beer, and I only drank good wine, and I only drank good liquor, and so I couldn't be an alcoholic, because to me, what an alcoholic was my grandmother, who I never knew, that died on the bathroom floor from alcoholism, or my uncle, who he fell off of a boat and chopped off one half of his butt, and then he lived in a trailer, and my grandmother took care of him. And my dad, throughout sobriety, well, actually until I was, until really pretty far into sobriety, I didn't have a relationship with my dad, but I'll get to that. So what I knew of alcoholism was the lady that was old and mean and died on the bathroom floor, and my Uncle Tommy, who had half of a butt. And you know, that's what I knew of it. I didn't know that alcohol, I knew that it was a family disease. I knew that there was probably a chance that something might happen to me that wouldn't happen to other people. I knew that when my mom saw me, if I had been sick, even if it was the stomach flu, if she ever came in and saw me laying on the bathroom floor, she got mad because she could see that she could see that in me. And, you know, my dad wanted to name me Carrie after his mom, and my mom said no, she wasn't going to name me after an alcoholic. Ta-da! She got an alcoholic, and she, I mean, it's, you know, I think that I tease her about that sometimes. But I had a picture, I found a picture of my grandmother. I never knew her, my alcoholic grandmother, and we look exactly alike. It is eerie how much we look alike, like to the point where in the picture, both of our hands, our sleeves are pulled down over our hands, and it's just, and that picture was before the disease hit her hard. And I love that I get to see that picture. I love that I get to see and know like where I come from more than just what my family wanted me to know, because they didn't want me to know all that. My mom's parents shielded me from the alcoholic side of my family to protect me. And they did that because they loved me. And no, I don't agree with it, but I know that they just loved me, and they wanted me to be okay, and they wanted to keep me safe and protected, and that's what they did their whole life. And I stomped all over them and broke their hearts. And then because of this program, I got to make amends for it. And I have a relationship with my mom today that's pretty amazing. And with my dad, too. So, anyway, towards the end of my drinking, I'm going to get to the end because that's where, I can still, just like I said, I can feel the ease and comfort. I can also feel the darkness that happened when it was at the very end. I had a relationship with a guy who, he was a musician, and I'm not really the musician type of girlfriend to have because I am a little crazy. I'll stay up for days, and I'll drink, and I'll do lots of drugs, and I'm not really pleasant to come home to, and I'm not really who you want to have on the road with you. And I knew how to push his buttons, and I pushed his buttons, and he would say, "Ashley, back off," and I would say this, and I would get up in his face, and it was just this battle back and forth, and it was an abusive relationship. And today I know my part in that relationship. I know my part in that abuse, and I have made amends. It's not recommended to make amends to boyfriends, but I had to make amends to that, to him, because if I had not made amends to him, I would not have been able to come back to Richmond when it was time for me to come back. I would have always had to hold my head down, because what I did was wrong. I pushed him to the point where it made him react that way, and I know that. And I'm not like co-signing on domestic violence, but I had a part in that. And if I hadn't been very clear with my part in that, then I wouldn't be. Y'all would have a different speaker today. So all through this tumultuous relationship, I also have a fun thing that I like to do, and that's called stealing your money. I worked the whole time, but my money ran out really fast, and then I needed other people's money, because I had an easy $100, $200 a day habit, and that's a lot of money. So I had a friend who, I stole a couple checks from him, and I wrote them to myself. I don't know why I wrote them to myself. I guess, like, now thinking back, I mean, I was kind of done, and I knew it was safe enough for that he probably wouldn't turn me into the police, but then the gig would kind of be up. I didn't think that wasn't my thought process then. It was just, how do I get this money as fast as I can get it? And he called my mom, and I expected my mom to bail me out, and she said, "I'm not bailing you out." She said, "You can go in the woods for 21 days for a wilderness therapy, or you can go to jail." And so some people, that may seem the same, but to me, the woods was a lot better off. That's what I did. I went in the woods for 21 days, and camping to me growing up was a trailer by the lake, not a tarp in the woods. And that trip was amazing. It probably wasn't amazing to the six guys that were there with coming off of like heroin and coming off of 3 years of alcohol and cocaine. They probably wanted to shove me over the side of the mountain. but I did things that I had never done. I climbed mountains. I canoed. I got to come out a little bit and play, and that was great. I'd never done that before. I'd never done any of those things before, and it was in a safe environment, and I didn't drink or didn't do drugs that whole time, and I was ready to come home and be sober at home with my family. Sober to me meant no drugs. I mean, because I'm not an alcoholic. I did not discover that I was an alcoholic until, I'll get to that. I didn't believe that I was an alcoholic. So I came home. Towards the end of that trip, they started talking about this place called Pia's Place in Prescott, Arizona. And I said, no, I'm fine. I'm just going to go home. And my mom said, no, you're not. She had the condo locked up. My truck was in the shop. And my bags were packed. So off I went to Prescott, Arizona for 90 days. I did not drink when I was there. When I came home for Christmas, I drank. As soon as I got off the plane, there was alcohol and there was beer in the car waiting for me, and I didn't see anything wrong with that because I didn't do cocaine. And I told them, I said, you didn't see all the cocaine that was on the back of the toilet and when I was in the bar. And they were like, Ashley, you're in drug and alcohol treatment and you are telling me about a story being in a bar. Do you see anything weird about that? And I was like, no, I didn't do the drugs. And they're like, couldn't get it through my head then that alcohol was a problem. And also, if alcohol is a problem, then I don't have anything else to lean back on. You know, my life had gotten pretty dark. So, I really enjoyed treatment. When I graduated, they gave me a little rock with a dragonfly on it, and they said, here you go, find a sponsor, get a home group, and I did none of that. I moved in with the boyfriend, and I did stop drinking. No, I did stop doing drugs, but I didn't stop drinking. And I drank a lot. And the relationship got worse. Obviously, it got worse. I got sicker and sicker and sicker and darker and darker and darker. And my condo, I lived in a place where I'd always wanted to live. And it was dark and disgusting, and there was trash everywhere. I never threw out my drug bags. I never threw out beer bottles. I don't know why I don't know why, but it was disgusting and dark and really, really, really sad and depressing. And that's how I felt. That is how I felt. I remember the exact place, the exact corner in Richmond where I was when I realized that it stopped working. Like when the alcohol stopped working and I couldn't breathe, and I thought, what in the heck am I going to do now? Because my solution has stopped. If I can't drink enough to get my head to shut up, what am I going to do? Luckily for me, my roommate when I was in treatment lived in Alaska, and I had been in contact with her some, and I called her after a really, really, really bad night, and she said, I want you to book a flight tomorrow, and I want you to come out here, and I did, and I liked it, and I was there for 4 weeks, and I found a job while I was there, and then I came back home, and I sold all my stuff, and I got on the plane, me, two suitcases, and my dog. And that was November 8th, 2005. And my only rule when I got there was that if I drank, I had to stay away from her house for 30 days because she was doing the deal. She was going to Alcoholics Anonymous. She was plugged in. She took me to a meeting, and it was a nooner, and they really scared me because it was a bunch of trucks. I mean, this is in Wasilla, Alaska, which is about 40 miles north of Anchorage. There's a bunch of truck drivers and a bunch of people that I thought, oh, I've really, really made a mistake here. I've overshot the mark. I'm not this bad. I don't need to be. Like, they joked when I got my 30 days that they could pass me around and rub my head. Like, you know, you pass the coins around and rub the coins for good luck. But, you know, I got to see some of those people 2 weeks ago when I went back to Alaska. So I had to pick a sponsor, and I thought very long, for about 90 days. That is a lie. For about 3 weeks, I think it was it was about 3 weeks that I thought long and hard, and I wanted to find the right one, and I swore it was not going to be a sponsor from the Nazi group, because there was this Nazi group, and they made you dress up, and they made you get a service commitment, and they made you show up, and they held you responsible. And I thought, I've had enough people my whole life tell me what to do. I don't need anybody to tell me what to do now. I'm certainly not going to join that group. God had other plans, because my sponsor that I picked was a member of that group. And I'm so grateful, because it saved my life. It saved my life. That is exactly what I needed, was I needed somebody to tell me what to do. I needed somebody to sit down and hold my hand, because I vibrated. I vibrated for like my first 5 years, I think. Just nerves and fear and also, I mean, and a lot of excitement too, but you know, it was all just up and down, and we got a book. I got a book, she got a book, we sat down together and we read our books together and we went through the steps, and I remember saying the third step prayer, and it was like the skies parted, and I really, honest to God, it was cloudy and then the skies parted. So I mean, that really did happen, and I remember thinking, well, I don't know if I can drive. Like, I felt it was that weight was lifted off of me after saying that third step prayer that I had never felt before. It was just, and I felt weird about driving. It was like, never had this before, and it was amazing. And I thought, oh, well, I can do this. I think I can do this. I can feel like this. And of course, then you know, you take it back and get, you know, it's just that whole juggling act that I play with my will and God's will and this brain of mine that likes to run the show all the time. But I did what she said. I called her in the morning. I like doing little things like taking a shower and brushing my teeth and walking my dog and not letting the dog go to the bathroom in the house. You know, I mean, there are things that, all of those things I had to relearn because I'd never done any of those things sober. And so we started on the journey of the steps. And I remember thinking, I know what this whole fourth step thing is about, because I knew what I had done wrong. I knew the things that I had done wrong and the people that I had hurt, and I was not afraid to put it down on paper. I knew that was what that my resentment that was getting to the fifth step. I knew that. I don't know how I knew it, but I had figured it out because I figured most everything out. And I said, okay, I can do that. And she said, but it's not just saying you're not just going to tell these people that you're sorry. You're going to change the way you treat your mother. You're going to change the way you show up to work. Because I wasn't showing. I had more jobs when I was in Alaska than I had total my whole working career. Because I don't know how to show up. I don't know how to show up and on time and be a worker among workers. I want you to, like, send off fireworks if I get to work on time one day. And that's, you know, I think that's a big deal. And it's not. Like, normal people do that. That's what they do. You get up and you go to work and you work real while you're at work. And if you don't feel good, that's fine to have a cup of coffee. You know, just you stay at work. And I couldn't grasp that because I still was really raw. And, you know, it's like, oh, all these feelings that I'm having. And I don't really know if I like you or you like me, but I really want y'all to like me so bad. And this is in all areas of my life, in AA and at work and driving down the street, at the grocery store, whatever. I'm still really, really, really in my head about me. And I'm selfish and self-centered, and I'm still selfish and self-centered today, but I know how to show up differently. So we do the steps, and like I said, I made amends to my family. I made amends to that boyfriend. And every year on my sobriety day, I call him and I thank him. Because if he had not loved me enough to let me go, he knew something was wrong with me. If he had not broken up with me, which what I thought was the worst thing in the world, I would have killed him, he would have killed me, or I would have killed myself. Like, I know, as sure as I'm standing here, that is how that story would have ended, one of those three ways. And so I am grateful for him. I'm grateful that he was the one that kind of got out of my way and then let me drink how I needed to drink so that I could find Alcoholics Anonymous. So I've had that sponsor that I had my first one, she decided to stop going to AA. So I got another sponsor, and then that sponsor decided to stop going to AA. And I have my sponsor that I have now. That sponsor, you know, I tried to have a local sponsor here, and I'm really good at hiding things from people, and I'm good at keeping my character defects to myself and not sharing that with somebody else. And so I get to have my sponsor that's in Alaska, and that's what works. And she's amazing. And, you know, that's what works for me. It doesn't work for everybody, but I have a commitment that I go out there at least once a year to see her. And I'm grateful for her because she's walked me through some things in sobriety that, that I probably, that I can't imagine walking through without her. So here I am in Alaska, and I think I was probably about 5 years sober, five years sober. I get myself pregnant, and that's what I've wanted my whole life, was to have a baby, to be a mom, and God had different plans, and that I lost that baby. I know today, like, and it doesn't make it any, please don't anybody think that I think it makes it any easier. It doesn't make it any easier. It doesn't make it any better when I'm going through it. But I know today that if I had had that baby, I would not have been able to move back here, because I wouldn't have been able to leave the state, and I wouldn't have the job that I have, the husband that I have, and the life that I have today. So I know, and even if I don't know it then, I know God's got me. That you guys have taught me that. Like, God is holding my hand through every single thing that I walk through. And I have the choice to reach out my hand and hold his hand, or I can just, you know, I got it, I'm fine, and fight my way through it. But he's still there when I get on the other side of it. And it's just easier for me to put the fight down and go through things and have the women, have people around me. I'm surrounded by people who love me all the time, no matter what, whether I want them around me. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes, you know, we get in our little... I get in a funk, and I don't want you guys around me, because y'all know when something's wrong with me, and I'll try and stay away from AA, but I always end up coming back. So that happened at 5 years sober. I had a miscarriage, and thank God my 5 year sobriety watch was like 2 days later, and I certainly couldn't go out and drink and miss my 5 year sobriety watch. It was a big party. We'd planned it. You know, and that's one of those things where God just puts everything in line to keep me safe and protected. And I know that I'm safe and protected when I'm stay here and when I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing and playing with God's kids. And that's who you guys are. So that 5 years, and I'm not managing my life well. I think that, okay, I need to go back to school. And so I'm going to go back to school, and I bought, at the time I was, if you don't know what a shipping container is, you probably all know what shipping container is. I was living in a shipping container on the side of the highway in Alaska. That's how I managed my life, sober. It had power, there was no running water, and that's where I lived. And I was the secretary of my home group. And thank God that I was the secretary of my home group, because I had to show up 4 nights a week and I had to be dressed. So I had to humble myself to find somebody's house to take a shower. And all of those things are things that kept me sober. And I'm grateful for that. And it's also pretty cool that I lived in a box on the side of the highway. But I kept finding myself evicted. You know, landlords want you to pay rent. I don't know. So I found a person who... It was a friend who had this shipping container, and we carved wood out of that shipping container, so it smelled like wood and turpentine and paint, whatever, varnish. So I probably killed some brain cells in there, unbeknownst to me. So I had part of my Alaska dream was I wanted to buy an Airstream, and y'all know what Airstream is? Silver bullet trailer. So I bought an Airstream, and I've enrolled in college, and I'm thinking, okay, this is it. God's will. I'm going to restore this trailer, and I did, and I don't know how I knew how to do those things. I knew how to replace the windows. I knew how to, like, level the floors, and I pulled everything out, and I found a place where I was going to park it. And the man that I bought it from had put wood paneling all on the top, and I'm not sure why he did that. And when he did it, he drilled from the inside out. And if you know anything about what's going to happen now, is the roof leaks. You're supposed to drill from the outside in. And I didn't know how to weld. And I was like, man, just like every time I turned around, I felt like I was hitting a wall. And I'm like over a little between 5 and 6 years sober. And I'm like, what is going on? Like, I cannot handle I was starting that tightness, you know, my gut was getting tight and the world was weighing on my shoulders and I can't breathe and I don't know what to do. And I think I'm doing God's will. This has to be God's will. It's good stuff, you know, right? Like, I'm going to school. I'm living inexpensively. I'm trying to, you know, get this trailer. And it just kept hitting a wall. And finally, I called one of my friends, and I didn't call my sponsor. I called one of my girlfriends, and I said, I'm going to drink. I said, because no one's life should be this unmanageable at over 5 years sober. Like, why does my life look like this? And if I drink, then that's the excuse and I can just start all over again. And she's like, no, maybe not. I said, what do you mean, maybe not? And she said, maybe you can't start all over again. What if you don't make it back? I said, well, of course I would make it back. I'm just going to go out and drink. And she said, you're just going to go out and drink. She said, I've heard your story, and I know that you do like to do a lot of other things other than go out and drink. And even if you did just go out and drink, you might not make it back. And she said, so I'm going to say something to you, Ashley, and it's probably going to make you mad. And she was right. She said, what's keeping you here? And I was very, very put off at that. I said, what do you mean, what's keeping me here? I have, my life is here. And she said, maybe it's time for you to go back to Virginia and get plugged in AA there and be there for your family. And as soon as she said that, I could breathe. And I knew that that's what it was. Like, that was what God's will was. And it scared the bejesus out of me. And because I didn't think I would ever move back to Virginia. So I called my sponsor the next morning and I said, Michael Ann, I think it might be time for me to move back to Richmond. And she said, I woke up this morning thinking the same thing. And I called my mom, and for the first time she said, you're welcome to come back home. And so I did. I had a couple more suitcases and one dog when I went there. That dog is in doggy heaven, and so I move home, and I have two other dogs when I move back home. So I should have said that in the beginning. Anything to change how my head feels, men and dogs. I always have my dogs. They have saved my life. My first dog taught me how to pray because I was really afraid to get on my knees and pray, but she was sick, and so I could get down on my knees and talk to her and pray to her. And I got to take care of her. Like, she took care of me. That dog saved my life. I know that I would have killed myself when I was out there drinking if it hadn't been for her, but I knew nobody would love her like I loved her, even though I wasn't a really good mom. So I come home, and I Outlaw Safe Cracker, which is a group in Richmond. Some of you guys are familiar with that. That home group is structured after my home group in Alaska, so I was immediately plugged in with AA. I was just, they knew I was coming. There was no way I was getting around it. And I'm grateful for that because the only other woman that I knew that was in sobriety drank 2 days after I got home, got moved back to Richmond. But they knew I was here, and so I just got plugged in there. And I started, had a job, and when I lived in Alaska, I started carving wood, and so when I moved back to Richmond, I needed somewhere to get wood, and I looked this guy that I went to high school up on Facebook, and he has a tree business, and so he's now my husband. I have an unlimited supply of wood, he will say he's an alcoholic. He doesn't have that peculiar twist that we have. He got tired of getting DUIs and feeling like crap, and so he just decided to stop drinking, and that is a phenomenon to me. I have no idea how that works, because for me, when I stop drinking, I get so much worse. Everything comes down heavy, and I really don't like you, and I don't like me, so I don't get that, but I won't tell him that he's not an alcoholic. Because I don't want him to drink, because it's really nice to have a husband that doesn't drink. So we dated. I don't know if y'all are familiar with that. Dating, some of us alcoholics don't really know how that works. I dated how my sponsor and her husband dated. We went on 4 coffee dates, and by the time we went on our first dinner date, I knew that he was the one I was going to marry. And I didn't let him kiss me for a whole month because I was afraid, one, he was going to be a bad kisser, or I would mess it up, because I mess things up. I, like, jump in head first, and then I never leave. Even if you want me to leave, I'm not leaving. I've been known to scale walls, to climb in bathroom windows when I was drinking if somebody didn't want me around. And I don't do that anymore. But, you know, it was just that feeling that, like, this is it. And it was it. And he's amazing. He's an amazing husband. you know, I have sponsees. I've had a couple that don't think that they're alcoholic. They weren't really keen on our program and how we do things. And, you know, that's okay because I'm still here. And that one sponsee has come and gone twice. And I've been picked up the phone as soon as she's called every time that she's come back. I have a sponsee that she has saved my life, and she's the most being able to walk with her. She's got some time, and that was different. It's different to sponsor somebody, and I thought for sure she was like, "Are you really asking me to sponsor you? Because you've got some time, and you're sober." And it's been an amazing journey, and that's that, you know, where it talks about in the big book, like, these are things that you don't want to miss. Like, I can't imagine missing that. I've got to walk with her through, she's got two twin girls that she did through IVF, and I got to hold her hand through all of that, and I get to babysit those twins. My husband and I go and babysit the girls, and that's the most amazing thing, to be able to walk hand in hand with another alcoholic through life's up and down, like life's ups and downs. Change in home groups was a big deal for me. Because I was very attached to Outlaw, that was the AA that I grew up in, and I thought for sure I was going to get drunk if I left that home group, and that's not the case. My work I needed to be there on Mondays and Thursday nights, and Outlaw meets on Mondays and Thursday nights, and it got to be too much for me to just find somebody to fulfill my commitment. I was getting a little stir crazy, and so I decided that it was time for me to change home groups. And surprise, I'm still sober. I made all that up in my head. It was just my, like, you know, I get feeling safe and secure in my little nest of AA, whether it's in Alaska or whether it's in Richmond, and that fear creeps in, and I don't want to leave because I like feeling safe now, and in AA is where I feel safe. But you know, if life happens and things change, and as long as I'm here in AA, then I get to still stay in AA, and I get to stay sober, and I get to be asked to come and speak, and that's amazing stuff. And it's not, being here, being at an AA meeting on a Sunday night was not what I thought that I would ever have wanted to do. It absolutely is what I want to do. You know, life is pretty amazing. I spoke on Thursday night, and I said, I'm so grateful for, and I couldn't believe I actually said it, I'm grateful for renting a house and living paycheck to paycheck, and sometimes not knowing when a bill is going to get paid, but it's all because I get to do it sober, and I drank through that stuff. I mean, I didn't open my mail. I don't know about you guys, but this is how unmanageable my life was. I lived in a condo for a year and a half, and I didn't want to go to the post office to pick up my mailbox key. A year and a half. Do you think I had some unopened mail in that mailbox? And, you know, he would just start leaving it outside the door for me, and I didn't open it. I mean, I just shoved it all in a corner, and because I didn't like being a responsible adult. I didn't know how to be a responsible adult. Today, most days, I know how to be a responsible adult. I have the most amazing job that I know my grandmother, I'll back up a little bit. My grandmother, when I moved, she had Parkinson's, and it hit her really hard and really fast. And the last year that she was alive, I got to go and have dinner with her every Saturday night. And I was holding her hand when she passed away. And I painted her nails the week before, so she had, when it was right around Halloween, so she had orange sparkly nail polish. She probably was not very happy about that, but I got to hold her hand when she passed, and that was the biggest gift. She trained me for I'm a crier too. I'm surprised I lasted this long. I tell people that she trained me for my job before I even knew that it was going to be my job. I'm an activity director at a retirement community. I love my job. I am not allowed, because old people and children are very honest, and they can tell when you're not thinking about them. So I have to leave everything that's going on in my world outside the door before I walk into those doors. And I get to be of service 40 plus hours a week. And it has saved my life. I love them so much, even the like crotchety mean ones, because my grandmother was not very nice. she was really nice and she got you to do what she wanted you to do in her younger years, but then as she got sick, she just didn't care how she made you feel, so she was just going to tell you what she wanted you to do, and she did. And I get to pay back all of the things that they did for me by being there for my residents and for their family members. And I got to take one of my residents to get her 32-year coin at an AA meeting. That is one of those things that you don't want to miss. Like, if anything had been different in my story, if one thing had been different, I would have missed that. And that is the most amazing thing. Like, she knew right when I started working there, I guess we can tell each other, you know, like we know an alcoholic, and whether we're in our cups or not. And she knew that I was an alcoholic, and we just struck up a relationship. Imagine that. And when it was time for her to get her coin, she asked me if I would take her, and I was absolutely honored to be able to do that. We had another resident that's in the program, and I got to set up a meeting for him to have, because he was in a wheelchair for a little while. He's younger. But it's so cool. Like, that's so cool. Like, I know God puts me in those little places, and if I'm not paying attention, I'm going to miss it. So to pay attention, to open my eyes, I get on my knees at night, and I thank God for keeping me sober, and I thank him for all the blessings that I have. And in the morning when I wake up, I open my eyes. Sometimes I get coffee before. but before I leave the house, I say a prayer. And I thank God for keeping me sober, and I ask him to please show me where I can be of service in that day. And I show me what you want me to do with the people you want me to be doing with. And most of the time, it works out. It doesn't always work out the way I want it to work out. Like, you know, if I had my way, I would have a baby. I would be a mom. I am a mom. I have three dogs that are, besides my husband, the loves of my life. It has been, my one little dog is a cancer survivor, and I've gotten to walk. I think God gives me lumpy cancer dogs because he knows that I know how to take care of them and love them. She's a little trooper and a fighter, and it's been a struggle to be able to financially figure out how we're going to pay for her treatment. But she's amazing, and she's healthy. Her cancer's been in remission for a year, and the only side effects that she's had was she gained weight from the prednisone, and she acts like she's a little dumpster diver. She eats everything and everything. But I know that God, that even though it took me a long time to be okay with that, to be okay with if God's plan does not include children, that I'm going to be okay. And when my sponsee delivered those two girls, I was driving home from the hospital, and for the first time, I didn't have that feeling that we get sometimes when somebody has something that we want that we don't have. And I stopped the car, and I pulled over and stopped the car. I said the wrong order. And I said, thank you, God, because I don't want to have that feeling. I don't want to have that jealousy, that envious feeling, especially not with the woman that I'm walking through AA with. And I didn't have it. And ever since then, it's just been that, like, okay, like if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I am not the type of person who is, we tried treatments, we tried hormone treatments, and I don't do well with that. I'm surprised that we made it through. Honestly, I'm surprised that our marriage made it through, because I was untreated alcoholism, and it wasn't anything I could do about it, because there wasn't alcoholism. It was hormones being injected into my body. And so I just had to come to terms with it's okay. And it is okay. I'm sober. I am an active member in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm the GSR of my group. I love service on that level. I don't know why, because I don't sit still very well, but I love going to the fall and spring assembly and just sitting there and listening to all that. I just soak it up. And I love being able to be to be that trusted servant that they send out, and they know that I'm going to be there. They know that I'm going to be at the district meeting. They know I'm going to be at the assembly, and they know that I will carry the message and carry our vote for our group the way that we want it to be carried. So it's, you know, life is, it is amazing, and it has its bumps, and it has its ups and downs, and it has its scary moments, and it has its wonderful moments, and I don't want to miss any of it. I don't want to miss anything, and I don't know what the thing is that I don't want to miss. So I can't cut back on my meetings. I can't cut back on my prayer. I can't cut back picking up the phone, because I don't know what it, I don't know what God's little message for me is going to be in the day. I think I've hit that wall a little bit. But thank you so much. I'm so, so, so grateful for being able to come out here. And I hope that you guys got something out of that. If you didn't, sorry. You'll have a speaker next Sunday. So thank you. Thanks.